Welcome to the Three Creeks Church Podcast. We're in a series called We Want a King, and we're discovering the character of God through the stories of Saul, David, and Solomon, the first three kings of the nation of Israel almost 3,000 years ago. We hope that through this series, you'll discover that nothing can separate you from the love of God.
All right. Well, good morning. My name is Joel, and I get to be the pastor here, and welcome to Three Creeks. If you're here for the first time, thanks for coming, and I kind of got to be here every week. I guess it's kind of what I do, but I just want you to know that as I drive here on Sunday mornings, I do recognize that you could be anywhere doing anything with just about anybody, and you chose to be here, and I think that that's a great move on your part to put yourself in a place where God is really speaking into the lives of people. I've never been more confident in saying that than this past week, because last week was a message from the Bible, and for whatever reason, God was just, he was speaking to a lot of people. I had over a dozen conversations this week about how God had loosened some chains and had kind of helped people shed the weight, the guilt that they were carrying, and that they are walking in a newfound freedom. And so I come here today eager to see this same thing happen again, see God move in your life, change your life, speak into your life. So I think it was a great move on your part to be here. We're in week 10 of a 12-week series, so we are nearing the end. It is not tailing off towards the end. It is ramping up at the end. I'm very excited about what I get to share today. We have started this series in week one with a guy named Samuel, who is a prophetic judge who then appointed the first king of Israel. His name was Saul, and it does not go very well with Saul. And then for the last 4 or 5 weeks, we've been telling stories about a guy named David, who's a man after God's own heart, the second king of Israel. And today we're going to come to the end of David's life and David's reign. And you're going to find out, does he do well all the way to the end? Does he love God through the finish line? And then when his reign is over, what happens next? Those are the questions that I'm going to get to answer today. I'm excited about doing it. When I was a younger man and I was just starting in ministry, my dad has been in ministry for 40 or 50 years, and he said to me, "Joel, if you want people to like you, don't tell people how to raise their kids, and don't tell people how to spend their money. Those are two touchy subjects." And so while I'm going to continue to wait on the whole telling you how to raise your kids thing, because let's be honest, none of my kids even know Jesus yet. They are 3 and 1, and they are little heathens back there in Three Creeks Kids today. So I'm going to let that kind of happen at first before I get too confident about that. But today, I am going to forsake the wisdom of my father, and I'm going to tell you the truth about all of your money and all of your stuff. And here's one of the things that I love about Three Creeks Church. As a leadership team at the very beginning, we decided that this is the way we're going to do it. We don't do 3 or 4 week topical sermon series. It's not how we do it. Instead, we take a book of the Bible, or we take a large chunk of the Bible, and we just make our way verse by verse by verse by verse by verse, and we just go through it, and we just say, "God, what are you trying to say to us through this today?" And I can't even tell you the number of times and the number of people who have said to me, "Hey, Joel, when are you guys going to do a series on giving or a series on generosity?" And I'm like, We don't have that. Well, and they say, "Well, you're going to have to at some point." And pastors strategize, just being honest with you, pastors strategize going, at what point in the year is it going to be best for us to have a series on generosity so that people will give more to the church? I'm just telling you, these are some of the things that happen. And they go, "Joel, at some point you're going to have to do that. When are you going to do that?" And I just say to them, I say, "We're going to get to it when we get to it." Like, as we go through the Bible, as we read all of the Bible, as we go through verse by verse, the Bible is full of stories and passages about how we're supposed to handle money, and I just say, "We're going to get to it when we get to it." And so because of that, I don't feel like I have to tiptoe into this conversation. I get excited about just sharing with you what God says about money. Did you know that money is, by a landslide, the thing that you are most stressed about, at least most of you? It's by far the biggest stressor in America, and we believe the lie that by getting more of it, our stress will go down. Well, some of you have been around long enough to know that that's not true. And what I would like to share with you today is, because what you really want is you want financial peace. You want financial freedom. You don't want to be enslaved by money. And what I want to share with you today are four truths about what God says about all of our money and all of our stuff. And if we were to believe them, I do believe that we would experience the financial freedom and the financial peace that we actually all are craving. So this is not a self-help talk. This is not a financial seminar. This is a message from the Word of God. We're just kind of going through our series and we've landed on a story that talks about our stuff and our money. It's not really a special event. We're not having a money talk today. This is a part of all of our lives. And so I just want to tell you what God says about it. If you get mad at me, well, I'm just the messenger. So you can take it up with him if you want. If you have a Bible, go to 1 Chronicles chapter 29. I'm going to tell you what happens in 1 Chronicles chapter 28 here in just a minute, but we're going to read together through 1 Chronicles 29. If you don't have a Bible, then I've got two things to tell you. Number one is that the verses will be up on the screen behind me so that you can follow along. And on your way out today, pick up a Bible that's on that white table, and that is yours to keep forever. It's our gift to you, and we'd love to give that to you. Let me tell you a little bit about 1 Chronicles. We've actually spent most of our time in this series in 1 and 2 Samuel, and now we're jumping all the way over, seemingly almost three books forward to 1 Chronicles. Well, 1 Chronicles was actually, there's two books called Chronicles in your Bible, 1 Chronicles and 2 Chronicles. Originally, it was one big book, and it was actually the last book of the Hebrew Bible. So before the New Testament was written, Chronicles was the last book of the Old Testament. Somebody had the foresight to know that we were going to struggle tremendously with ADD. And so they split it up into 1 Chronicles and 2 Chronicles to get us to read it. If you were to read the Bible, kind of one book at a time, you would read 1 Samuel and then 2 Samuel, and then 1 Kings and then 2 Kings, and then 1 Chronicles and then 2 Chronicles. This is how they're ordered in our Bibles. If you were to read them like that, you would begin reading 1 Chronicles, the fifth book out of those six, and you would say, hey, wait a minute, I feel like I just read that. Because Chronicles is really a lot of the retelling of the story of what happens in 1 and 2 Samuel and 1 and 2 Kings. But in 1 and 2 Chronicles, we see a lot of unique stories that are told about David that we don't see in 1 and 2 Samuel. And so today, I want to read you one of these amazing stories about King David and the end of his life, the end of his reign. And it's going to be in 1 Chronicles 28 and 29. Let me set the stage for you in 1 Chronicles 28, so that you understand exactly the setting of what's going on when we get into 1 Chronicles 29. David, he's kind of nearing the end of his life. And so what he decides to do is he decides to call all of the leaders of Israel all to Jerusalem, the capital city. He says, I've got something to share. And so anybody who has any role of importance in the entire nation of Israel is definitely coming to Jerusalem because they know that David's coming to the end of his life. And David has been a wonderful king for 40 years. And David is going to probably pass the baton to the next king at this meeting. And so nobody's making an excuse for this one, right? They're all coming to the capital city. And David steps up and he tells them that one of his desires as a king was to build the Ark of the Covenant and to build a temple that would hold it. And so the Ark of the Covenant has been this thing that Israel has carried with them. At that point in time, it's where the presence of God manifested itself in the most powerful way. That God would rest on the Ark of the Covenant. And what would happen is Israel, they were kind of like this group of nomads. They would travel from here to there and everywhere. And in the instructions for the Ark of the Covenant, God also gave them instructions on how to build a tent that would cover it. And David said, I would like to be the one that builds the building that holds the Ark of the Covenant. And God says to David in his prayer, you are not going to be the one who is going to build the Ark or build the temple. Your son Solomon is the one who will do this for me. And so David tells this to all the people, and that is a confirmation that Solomon, David's son, is going to be the next king. When he is with Solomon in front of all the people, he charges Solomon to know God, to be obedient, to be courageous, and to lead Israel well. And this is where we pick up the story in 1 Chronicles chapter 29, all the leaders of Israel, David and his son Solomon up on the stage. And David isn't just going to hand the keys to Solomon and say good luck. David is going to give him a generous parting gift. And we're going to read about it in 1 Chronicles 29, verse 1. Here we go. Then King David turned to an entire assembly and said, my son Solomon, whom God has clearly chosen as the next king of Israel, is still young and inexperienced. The work ahead of him is enormous, for the temple he will build is not for mere mortals. It is for the Lord God himself. Using every resource at my command, I have gathered as much as I could for building the temple of my God. Now, there's enough gold, silver, bronze, iron, and wood, as well as great quantities of onyx, other precious stones, costly jewels, and all kinds of fine stone and marble. You know when you go out to eat with somebody who's older than you, like your parents or your grandparents, and you're sitting there and you're like, are they going to pay for this? You know that feeling? It's like, are they buying? Because they didn't say anything, but they usually do. Like, and let's be honest, we order differently, right? If we know they're paying, it's like, I'm not getting a steak if this is on me, and I'm not drinking Dr. Pepper. I'm getting water if they're not paying. And you just kind of have this, like, I think I'm going to benefit from the size of their wallet, but I'm not sure. And so you just kind of sit there and keep your composure until you find out what happens. This is, I got to think, kind of how Solomon feels a little bit. David is up there. He's saying, I've gathered all the resources at my command. David is wealthy. He's rich. He's been blessed by the Lord in this way. And Solomon's up there, and he's got to be thinking, I think David is going to hand all this to me. But he's trying to keep his composure, and he's trying to act like he's not expecting it. But I'm thinking in his heart, he's going, man, all of this stuff that David, my father, has gathered, it's about to be passed on to me. And then look what David says next. And now, because of my devotion to the temple of my God, I'm giving all of my own private treasures of gold and silver to help in the construction. This is in addition to the building materials I've already collected for his holy temple. I'm donating more than 112 tons of gold from Ophir, 262 tons of refined silver to be used for overlaying the walls of the buildings, and for the other gold and silver work to be done by the craftsmen. And look at what David says. Now then, who will follow my example and give offerings to the Lord today? See, first David says, I've used all my resources to gather as much as I could, and now I'm going to give all the gold and all the silver from my own personal private treasure. I'm giving it all. David is not saying, do as I say. He's saying, do as I do. You guys, nothing inspires generosity like a very generous person. And I would even propose that your favorite people in the world are the most generous people that you know. And David, he sets the tone. His generosity is what is going to inspire the people of Israel to give to this too. And look what happens. Are they inspired? Let's find out. Verse 6, then the family leaders, the leaders of the tribes of Israel, the generals, the captains, the king's officers, they all gave willingly. For the construction of the temple of God, they gave about 188 tons of gold. We can't even imagine this. 10,000 gold coins, 375 tons of silver, 675 tons of bronze, and 3,750 tons of iron. They also contributed numerous precious stones, which were deposited in the treasury of the house of the Lord under the care of Jehiel, a descendant of Gershon. Look, you don't even know how much gold and silver and bronze and iron that is. We can't wrap our minds around it. 3,750 tons of iron? They've got to be going, we didn't even know we had all of this. Can you imagine all of this stuff just piling up? People are taking off their earrings and taking off their jewelry and throwing it on the pile. And it's more than they can even manage. And I'm just thinking, man, they are so inspired to support the work of God in the house of God. And I imagine that it is madness. And none of them are mad about it. None of them are sad about it. They're not regretting their generous gift. In fact, look at verse 9. It says, the people rejoice over the offering, for they had given freely and wholeheartedly to the Lord. And King David was filled with joy. They're not sad about it. They don't give because they're compelled by their guilt. They give because they want to give to the work of the Lord. And then what happens is, they have what I call a post-giving heart party. You ever had one of those? Where you just gave something generously to somebody, nobody even knew about it. Even the person that you gave it to may not have even known that it was from you. But inside of your heart, you rejoiced. Have you ever had this happen? I've had it happen. Where I, honestly, sometimes I give and I kind of hope people notice, but there have been times when I have generously given something and I'm like, I don't even care if anybody notices. I'm having a post-giving heart party right here in my heart right now. And this is the experience that all of these people are having. They're experiencing financial peace. They're experiencing financial freedom and a deep confirmation in their souls that they've done the right thing. And then David, this is what he does. After all of it piles up, after there's more gold, more silver, more jewels than they can even manage, after they have it all, David takes all of their attention and he puts it on God. And he prays a prayer in front of all the people. And in this prayer, there are four truths that I'm going to pull out. I'm not going to really camp on one of them too long that it feels like we're going to go forever, but I am going to spend a little bit of time on each one of them so that you really understand what God's really saying about all of your stuff and all of your money. This is the prayer that David prays. Look at verse 10. And David, he praised the Lord in the presence of the whole assembly. And this, here's the first one. O Lord, the God of our ancestor Israel, may you be praised forever and ever. Yours, O Lord, is the greatness, the power, the glory, the victory, and the majesty. Everything in the heavens and on the earth is yours, O Lord. And this is your kingdom. We adore you as the one who's over all things. Wealth and honor come from you alone, for you rule over everything. Power and might are in your hand and at your discretion, God. People are made great and given strength. Everything in the heavens and on the earth is yours, O Lord. Here's the first truth about all of our money and all of our stuff. It's not yours, it's his. It's not mine, it's his. It's all his. Your wallet, it's his. The coat that is on the chair that you're sitting in, it's his. The car that's in the parking lot that you are going to go into in a few minutes, it's his. It doesn't belong to you. The car seats that are in your car, they're his. The garage that you pull into, it's his. The dirty dishes in your sink, they're his. Everything on the heavens and the earth is yours, O Lord. Your trailer, it's his. Your lake house, it's his. Your snowblower, it's his. Your scarves, ladies, all of them. They're all his. Your golf balls, fellas, they're all his. Every piece of shiplap on all y'all's walls, it's all his. Everything in the heavens and on the earth is the Lord's. And here's the thing, y'all. We don't have to feel bad about that. God gave it to us. God gave us so much. We are so rich. We're so rich. When you read a verse in the Bible that addresses a rich person, you have to know that that is written to you. I mean, we got up this morning, and rather than hoping we had a pair of shoes, we picked which shoes went well with our outfits. Some people hope to have a house. We have houses for our cars. Let's not be tricked into thinking that we are not a rich people. And what Jesus says in Luke 12 is, to whom much is given, much is required. To whom much is given, that's us, much is required of us. We're supposed to hold all that we have like this. And here are some of the common excuses I hear as to why we don't do this. Well, what if I let somebody borrow it and they break it? It's not yours, it's his. Who cares? Be generous. Well, what if I have to spend money to fix it? It's not yours, it's his. Who cares? Be generous. Well, it's going to take up more of my time. It's not yours, it's his. Who cares? Be generous. But I'm supposed to be a good steward. I'm supposed to be responsible. Yes, yes, you are. And maybe the most stewardly thing you could do would be to just be recklessly generous with that thing that you have. There's a lot more in your Bible about being generous than there is about being responsible with your stuff. Just saying. And I say that, and I think we agree on this. Think about this. We agree on this principle that this would be important because we try to instill this principle in our children. You know what we call it with them? We call it sharing. This is what we call it with our kids. Sharing. I think most parents, at least all the good ones, at some point have to instill this value of sharing in their kids. Have you ever seen a bunch of kids, six or seven kids, fighting over a couple of toys, and one kid grabs that thing even though it's not really theirs, and they grab it and they go, "That's mine." And I just want to grab it and be like, "No, that's mine," and nobody's playing with it right now, you know? And you guys, that is so dumb to us. But how often do we just kind of behave in the same way where we go, "That's mine"? Don't be that kid. And think about this. Is there anything as a parent in your kids' toddler years that thrills you more than to see your kids, unprovoked by you, to be generous with their friends? Oh, it has happened a few times. Probably because their mom, not me. It has happened a few times, and when I see my daughter just being generous with her friends, it thrills my heart as her dad. I know that it thrills the heart of God when we don't grasp onto our stuff, but that we live recklessly generous because it's all his, it's not ours. This is the first truth that I see in David's prayer. Here's the next one. He continues in verse 13. Oh, our God, we thank you and we praise your glorious name. Who am I? Who are my people that we could give anything to you? Everything we have came from you. We only give you what you first gave to us. We are here only for a moment, visitors and strangers in the land, as our ancestors were before us. Our days on earth are like a passing shadow, gone so soon without a trace. The second truth about all of your money and all of your stuff is that none of us get to take any of it with us. None of us get to take any of it with us. And David says that our lives, our days are like a passing shadow gone so soon without a trace. The end of our lives has an amazing way of leveling the playing field. Think about it. The richest person in the world at the end of their life, they don't get to take a dime with them. The poorest person in the world, they don't get to take a dime with them. Jeff Bezos or Bezos or whatever his name is, net worth $118 billion, doesn't get to take a dime with him when this is all over. And the poorest person in the poorest nation in the world doesn't take one dime with them. It levels the playing field. Sometimes you hear a rich person say, you know, in humility, they'll go, you know, I'm just like everybody else. I just put my pants on one leg at a time. And I just want to be like, listen, when this is all said and over, none of us will be wearing any pants. Like, you're not putting either leg in either pant leg because this is a no pants land. We're taking none of it with us. And if you're getting excited right now, you need to go listen to last week's message, all right? If this no pants land thing is getting y'all fired up. Thank you, Erica, for the laugh back there. Y'all, I heard a pastor ask his church this question. I want to ask it to you today. Do you think we're more concerned with our standard of living or other people living? Do you think we're more concerned with our standard of living or other people living? You go, Joel, well, what do you mean living? You mean physically living or spiritually living? Either. Do you think we're more concerned with our standard of living, our houses or our cars, than other people living? I'm just telling you, 25,000 people die every day because of starvation and poverty around the world. We could find out the answer to that question if we looked at our credit card statements. I'm just saying. Or you know, you go, well, let's go the angle with the spiritual living. Are we more concerned with our standard of living, our clothes or our vacations, than other people spiritually living? There's 120,000 people within 5 miles of this building who are not spiritually alive. They're spiritually dead. And I'm just asking, do you care more about your standard of living or other people spiritually living? I think we could tell if we looked at our credit card reports. I'm not trying to make anybody feel guilty, but I am just trying to be honest and go, if that convicts you, if that hits a nerve, if that strikes a chord in your heart, maybe that you need to make a change. Maybe something that you're doing needs to be reallocated to something that lasts more and is more important than your standard of living. We don't get to take any of this with us, none of it. And that's the second truth that David brings out about all of our money and all of our stuff. Here's the third one. David goes on in verse 16. O Lord, our God, even this material we've gathered to build a temple to honor your holy name, it comes from you. It all belongs to you. And I know, my God, look at this, that you examine our hearts and you rejoice when you find integrity there. You know that I have done all this with good motives, and I've watched your people offer their gifts willingly and joyously. The third truth about all of your money and all of your stuff is that when you give it, your motives matter. They really matter. David says, he goes, look at my heart, God. I know you're looking at my heart. I know you're finding integrity there because I have good motives. And these people, we are giving willingly and generously. We are not giving because we feel guilty or because we feel like we should. We're doing it with good motives. And when we give, our motives matter. What's in our hearts when we give, that really matters. What David is saying is this. If you're going to give it so that somebody notices it, just keep it. If you're going to give it because somebody is making you do it, just hang on to it. If you're going to give it begrudgingly because you think it's what a good Christian does, forget about it. If you're going to give because you think that God will financially bless you in return, you're crazy. It's not what it says in here. It's not what it says in here. You can't trick God. He knows what's in your heart, and he's pleased when he finds integrity, when he finds great motives. And so we don't give because somebody told us to. We don't give for the tax break. We don't give because we'd feel bad if we don't. We don't give because we'd feel good if we do. Our motives matter. Here's the motivation behind why we ought to give. The motivation behind why we ought to give generously is this. We have been ruined by the generosity of God. We've been ruined by the generosity of a God who has been so generous to us. God so loved the world that he sent his son. He gave his son to us. And when his son came, Jesus, it says about him that he did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. Everything that we have is from the Lord. All the things that we own and our salvation and grace, we have been ruined by the generosity of God that we can't not give again. We can't not give back to that because we just have been ruined by how generous God is. That is a tremendous motivation to give to somebody in need or to the work of the Lord. And then here is the last one. David closes his prayer in front of all of the people. He says this, O Lord, the God of all of our ancestors, Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, make your people always want to obey you. See to it that their love for you never changes. And then look at this part. Give my son Solomon the wholehearted desire to obey all your commands, laws, and decrees. And give my son Solomon everything necessary to build his temple for which I have made these preparations. The fourth truth about your money and your stuff is this. We're supposed to pray for God's continued provision for all that we need. If God calls you to it, he will provide for it. We're supposed to pray for that. If God has called you to raise your family, you should pray for that. He will provide for you. He will provide for you. If God has called you to raise your kids, which he has, if you have kids, he will provide for you. We should pray for that. If God has called you to go on a missions trip for 2 weeks or for 2 years, and that is what God has called you to do, he will provide for you. You should pray for that. We are supposed to pray for the continual provision of the Lord. I can't think of somebody who needed less from the Lord. David had so much in his hands. It's piled up in front of his eyeballs. And he's saying, God, would you please continue to provide for all that you're calling us to do? Do you believe these four truths in David's prayer? Do you believe that it's all his? It's not really ours. Do you believe that we don't get to take anything with us? Do you believe that our motives matter? And do you believe that we're supposed to continually pray for the provision of the Lord? I kind of mentioned this earlier, but money is the number one stressor in most of your lives. And we have bought the lie that if we get more, our stress will go down. And many of us know from experience that that isn't true. Believing these four things about what God says about all your stuff and your money, that's the first step to financial freedom and financial peace. When you believe these truths, it becomes much easier to give. When you believe that it's all his anyways, it becomes much easier to give it away. And when you're generous, you will realize that what Jesus said is true, that it's better to give than to receive. This is what these people are experiencing in this moment. And David closes the prayer. I think this is an amazing verse at the end of this story. I just love verse 20 where it says this. David says to the whole assembly, this is after his prayer, give praise to the Lord your God. And the entire assembly praised the Lord, the God of their ancestors. And they bowed low and knelt before the Lord and their king. David says, give praise to the Lord. And it says that the entire assembly praised the Lord. It means that they all got on their feet. They started to sing songs praising God. And what David did through the whole process is he took their focus off of what they needed. They were all at home hustling and bustling, trying to gain more or get more. He took their focus off of that, and then he brought them together, and he put their focus on all that they had to be thankful for. Think about that. When they're chucking all their stuff on these piles, all the gold, all the silver, all the bronze, whatever, they got to be going, we didn't even know we had all of this. How could you be in that moment and go, God hasn't really blessed us? How could you say that? David takes all of their focus off of what they need and puts it on all that they have to be thankful for. It's a great place to be. It really is. And you see the people, it says that the entire assembly praised the Lord because they were able to see even with their eyes all that God had given them to be thankful for. I think that's an amazing way for them to end their Solomon here's all my stuff service. And I think it's a great way for us to end our service today, where the people of the Lord just spend a minute thinking about all that God has given us. And that we would stand and praise the Lord, because everything on the heavens and earth is his, and everything that we have, God just gave it to us to bless people with. What an amazing opportunity. And so here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna stand right now. Will you stand with me? The band, we're going to sing a song. It's called Oh Praise the Name. It's a song where we're just going to praise God for what he has given to us. And what's cool about this song is that there's about a 45-second instrumental about halfway through. The band will kind of step back from their microphones, and so you will know that it's not necessarily time to sing, but they're just going to play an instrumental behind to kind of fill the room with music. And in those 45 seconds, I just want you to over and over and over in your mind, just say, God, thank you for, God, thank you for, God, thank you for. And just spend 45 seconds counting your blessings, remembering all that God has already blessed us with. Let's sing together and praise God for his unbelievable generosity to us. Hey, let me just read you one more verse. I read it to you earlier, but I just feel like I should read it again. It's the verse that said, the people rejoiced over their offerings after they had given it all, and they had given freely and wholeheartedly to the Lord. And these last couple words, it says, and King David was filled with joy. Now, I'm not going to put myself on par with King David in any way whatsoever, other than to say, I know that feeling of being filled with joy when I see the generosity of people, because I'm just sitting there even during that little instrumental, just praising God and thanking God for you all and you all's generosity. There's a couple in here 10 days ago or so. They said, hey, we found $250 extra dollars that we didn't know we had. Do you know anybody in our church that might need that? I said, yeah. I gave them three or four different options, and they just gave it to them. It's just unbelievable. And then we gave you guys this opportunity a couple weeks ago where we said, hey, for Goshen Lane, there's a bunch of kids that don't have coats, hats, and gloves in this school, and we just want to leave them here, and then the teachers can come and have, there's a bunch of kids that walk to and from school, and they don't have coats, and you guys gave tons, I don't know if you saw the picture, but tons of coats and hats and gloves, and I heard stories this week of teachers getting to bring individual kids down to that coat rack, and they got to pick out their favorite color. I'm just filled with joy with you guys, man. I'm so proud of you, church. We put this other opportunity in front of you. We said, we emailed our missionaries that live in Burkina Faso. There's three of them that we support. We said, we're sending a team over there. What do you guys want for Christmas? And we said, dream big and no promises or whatever. And they sent us a list back, and they're hoping for one or two of the things on their list. And we put this out to all of our community groups, and we've raised all of them. I mean, all of them. We're giving them like an iPhone and frozen turkeys, and it's just going to be so cool to hear the story about how your generosity is going to impact those people. There are so many people in our church that give faithfully and consistently to the work that God is doing here. I'm so thankful for you. I'm so proud of you. And I know there's people in here right now who you're going to walk right across the hall and you're going to take two or three of those little ornaments and you're going to buy a gift for someone and you're going to donate it and you're never going to get to see who gets that gift. You're never going to get to see it. You're just doing it out of the generosity of your heart. I just want you to know that I'm so proud of you, and I'm filled with joy when I think about you. And if you think about this, this is true. We are never more like Jesus than when we give something away to somebody who can never repay us. We're never more like Jesus than when we live generously with someone and then they can never repay us. And so I want you to go and I want you to be thankful this week for all that you have. I want you to be generous with all that you have, because it is a wonderful, wonderful way to live. Our prayer team is always here after every service. If you'd like to pray about what we talked about or anything else going on in your life, we are here for you. We hope you have a tremendous, tremendous week, and we'll see you soon. Thanks for coming to Three Creeks.
Thanks for listening to the Three Creeks Church podcast. To find out more about our church, to give online, or to attend a service, visit threecreekschurch.com.